T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Molly and Hall.
We're trying to wake Chicago up.
Live at 5 on 670 The Score.
And here they come.
David off this week and Tom Thayer kind enough to sit in. John's in Joliet. Good morning, John.
Good morning, guys. You know, first of all, who needs a 12-step program when you got this Cody Parkey on your team? For the life of me, it's like a scab that keeps getting peeled open every time I hear Parkey's name.
Well, I mean, that goes one of the 5 of 5 questions. You know, where would the Bears be right now if they would have made that field goal? And where would a majority of the Bears fans be right now? Would they be confident in the kicking situation going into the season? Or would they want a lineup of competitors behind Cody Parkey that are trying to earn his job away from him?
Even if they went on
to have Super Bowl success, what would the state be?
But this is exactly what we're talking about in professional sports. In professional sports, you're supposed to fight for your job on a game-by-game basis, whether you're playing 162 or 16 of them. That is the whole point of being a professional. Is if you're not good and you're not putting up the numbers you need, they're going to find somebody else.
Right.
It's as simple as that.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall.
Your morning guy over there.
Mornings on The Score.
You know, it almost seems like we're kind of doing a skit here because you look so much like Brian Dennehy with your beard that it's hard for me to... I actually sat there while we were talking, looking up some pictures of him with the beard. And
really?
Yeah, is kind of his onstage presence. You know Brian Dennehy, you know who I'm talking about.
Yes,
the actor.
I have been accused in my life of being Brian Dennehy. I guess the question then is, do you like Brian Dennehy?
First of all, you don't ask the questions around here. I do. You understand? Secondly... We don't want guys like you in this town.
Mully Hall.
I'm so fired up.
Tom Thayer, you're a legend. Mike Mulligan, you're God.
Here we go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. And I would be a false god, no question about it. But Tom, you are certainly a legend.
Right.
And bless you, kind sir, for getting up with us again this morning. Look at you.
I just stayed up all night.
I believe it. You were just working out
the whole time. Right from Division Street
You're in unbelievable condition. You're a very powerful and strong man and a handsome man.
You got to fight for the right to party.
And you've done it. It's interesting to listen to that yesterday that we talked about. I do honestly believe that there has to be a meritocracy in every team, every professional team. You only play if you earn it, and you have to earn it every day. But the reality of it is, Tom, sometimes your contract speaks for you. Sometimes the team's commitment to you speaks for you. And where teams get into big trouble, and I'm not naming names, I'm just saying generally speaking, is when a contract or a belief, a draft, whatever investment you make in a player becomes more important than what the guy's doing on the field. The investment you make in the player creates the expectation, but if you don't live up to that expectation, the investment really shouldn't matter. And unfortunately, it does far too often.
Well, you know, it brings back memories of the opening team meeting of the 85 season, because we sat there and Mike Ditka says, I'm going to go to bat with the guys that are in the room. I'm not going to worry about the guys that aren't here. And he was talking about Al Harris and Todd Bell that were in a contract holdout. And for people like myself or young draft choices or free agents that weren't really familiar with Mike Ditka that much, that message kind of resonated with me because it intimidated me. Because here's these guys that are coming off a Pro Bowl and, you know, the championship, or not getting beat by San Francisco the season before.
Right.
You know, the roster is almost set, and he's already talking about, all right, if you're not here, you're not committed, I'm willing to go to bat. And then Dave Dorsey and Wilbur Marshall step up to the plate, and the rest is history.
Wilbur is one of my all-time favorite Bears. I think that's an example of a guy who, had he stayed in Chicago, had he not left via free agency, I think he'd be in the Hall of Fame. I think he was that good a player. But and I think he was great when he went to Washington and then he went on to Arizona. He was fine. He just was asked to do a different role. And the role that he had in Chicago really featured him in that defense, and he would have been regarded differently, in my opinion, had he not left town.
You know, the strengths that he had here were Mike Singletary and Otis Wilson, because they were a great support at that linebacker position for them. Even, you know, Jim Morrissey, Ron Revere, and the rest of the crew. But I would have. It would have been interesting to see his attitude towards Vince Tobin after Buddy Ryan left after the Super Bowl season, because Buddy had a real strong controlling personality over every member of that defense. Vince Tobin was really successful, but he had a different personality trait than Buddy Ryan did. So it would have been interesting to see Wilbur in that transition. But one of the most physically gifted guys I've ever seen in my life was Wilbur Marshall.
Wilbur Marshall, he looked like a stormtrooper or something. He looked different in a uniform than other guys.
Right.
I mean, he was that good an athlete and that great a physical specimen. I just was it a you guys played a preseason game against Detroit, I think it was, where he just went crazy. He was just kind of testing himself. I mean, who knows what the limits would have been with that guy. He was a hell of a player.
You know, it's like almost the same thing. The two most physically gifted guys that I saw in my time with the Bears were Alonzo Spellman and Wilbur Marshall.
Wow.
And Alonzo had that type of physique. He was so gifted that if he would have had, you know, a stronger supporting cast that stayed surrounding him in a positive direction, you don't know what would have happened with Alonzo. Unfortunately, the issues came about, and it kind of derailed his career. But just talking about his physical gifts, there's not a lot of guys like Wilbur and Alonzo.
I always felt when you talk about Spellman that he was going to walk in, and, you know, I think it was like free agency, they had to make a decision on him. He was going to walk into another team. He'd walk in the building, and you'd give him a contract.
Oh,
just the way he looked was so like, oh, my God, this guy must be a monster.
Right. You know, and two is I used to have a chance to talk to Alonzo when I was broadcasting, because I thought he had similar rush abilities to Dan Hampton because of Dan's got really long arms. He's unique out of his stance. And I put together a little tape showing Alonzo of Dan Hampton's rush techniques. And I said, you should try to emulate what Dan does and try to stay away from the offensive lineman with the length of your arm and the power that you can use within your hands. And it didn't click for him.
Pity.
And it also reminded me of the talent of Hampton and the way that he could use his assets up and down the line of scrimmage. And he's a Hall of Famer because of it.
Dan is one of those guys that I guess people don't, if they don't remember, they don't understand. He made a Pro Bowl at all four positions on the defensive line.
Right. Never done that before. Yeah.
And he, it was like J.J. Watt. When J.J. Watt was going strong and being Defense Player of the Year for a couple of years running, that was Dan. He was like this country strong, just this monster, the Danimo. I mean, he was absolute and a really smart guy.
Yeah.
And a guy that understood everything going on around him. What a phenomenal talent. What a great draft pick, Dan.
You know, a different type of body style, but similar traits of the two. It was also Howie Long, because he's the type of guy that would play over the offensive guard in first and second down. He'd move out over the offensive tackle in third down. But then when they played the 46 defense, he could come and play over the center. And Howie was equally not well. He, you know, they had a little bit different body style. Dan was a lot longer and leaner, and Howie was more of my height and my size. So, but he was able to play up and down the line of scrimmage also.
Interesting stuff. We are getting ready for the second half of the season, the baseball season. Workers at 35th and Shields are completing the netting that will go around the entire ballpark. I think that's a great idea. I think that we're in an era now where you're just coming off an all-star game. And by the way, Verlander was the guy that kind of laughed at the idea that the ball wasn't juiced, he said baseball had made it a blanking joke, and he ridiculed Rob Manfred for denying that the ball was juiced and said that he thinks it's juiced. Now he's given up a major league high 26 home runs, and he never had been like that in his career. Apparently, he got chewed out about it. He got brought to the woodshed, and and told what's what. But is it wrong of me in my mind to connect those two things, to connect putting the netting up to protect fans when we're talking about a juice ball? And I mean, listen, there's been horrible injuries, including what happened in Houston with the Cubs and Albert Elmora Jr. and his reaction, that the poor little girl that apparently has a fractured skull from this. There's a law. It's like they call it the baseball law. Because on the ticket, it tells you basically come at your own risk. They are, you know, exempt from lawsuits. Would that change if you had juiced the ball and someone got hit by it and you could make a connection between the power that was, you know, weaponizing the ball almost? And does that mean netting should be everywhere? And is that why the commissioner, we've said before, why not just admit it? Yeah, we juiced the ball. We want to. Maybe that's an answer.
Well, you know what? Obviously, they're never going to put up nets in the outfield. You know, the exit velocity of a baseball going to the outfield is, I'm sure, a lot slower than it is when it's going down each baseline.
Right.
And you also have to look at your viewing disadvantage when you're going down the baselines rather than in the outfield when you're just staring straight ahead. So I do think they have to protect the consumer, whether they have juice baseballs or not. The ability of the baseball player is such that they can swing later and still make contact with the ball. And if they're swinging super early or they're swinging super late, just trying to make contact to keep their at bat alive, that's when the balls are leaving the stadium at such a rapid rate. And if someone is trying to get the vendor's attention more than he is watching the batter, you know, it's just too unpredictable. And then, like I said, as the athletes get better,
right,
they can do stranger things with the baseball than ever before.
All right, we're going to get into that. We'll talk about some of that stuff. We've got great stuff from Chris Bryant on Joe Maddon. Really interesting comments. I want to get your take on that. The robot umpire debuted yesterday, and he did well for himself. He did the independent Atlanta League. He's still not sentient. He hasn't gained consciousness, so he's not trying to take over the world. But we're heading in that direction. We're heading toward the inevitability of the computer calling balls and strikes in baseball.
It's weird because when I was watching the home run contest, you look at the umpire and he's standing off to the side and he's just telling who's ever pitching to the batter at that time, okay, it's appropriate time, you can throw the ball now. So if you have a robo-ump, is there going to be a guy that's actually going to stand there and tell, okay, pitcher, you can throw now? Or would that position completely be taken out of the game?
The computer's only good as whoever programs it.
Right. Well, apparently the real umpire had a cell phone in his pocket, and the computer was telling his cell phone whether it was a ball or strike, and he had an earpiece and he was calling the game, but it was the robot that was calling the game. So there was a human presence, and the guy did bow down and look at the pitch and everything, but he didn't argue with the computer. He just called whatever the computer said.
You're wrong. And anybody that wants a robot umpire is wrong.
We'll get into it. It's funny stuff. And a lot of different things. Kawhi Leonard, this is a strange story, and we'll talk about it next. We got the 5 and 5. He's the great Tom Thayer, and I'm your lowly Mully, and we will be back. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Tom Thayer, you're a legend. Mike Mulligan, you're God.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
5 at 5 brought to you by Sport Clips. Cut the weight, download the new Sport Clips haircut app, and check in. It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
What do you make of the protective netting now added guaranteed rate field? It will be in by Wednesday, even though they don't play a home game until July 22nd. And if the ball is indeed juiced, shouldn't all of Major League Baseball get netting up immediately?
Yeah, I got to tell you that I don't know why I'm connecting these things in my head, probably because they're happening one after the other. I always thought it was a good idea to get the protective netting going. I understand that people don't like it, but I think you will like it if it keeps you safe, and I think it's a safety issue, and it's about keeping the fans safe. Unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know, sometimes I wonder, we're all walking around with these devices, and that is fantastic. If you need to find someplace, if you need to look up something, if you need to contact someone in an emergency, it's wonderful to have a phone and to walk around with one, but it also means that there are a ton of people that are staring at screens. And, I mean, how many times have you walked through an airport, walked down a street, and bumped into somebody because they're looking at a screen? They're walking and walking into you because they're not paying attention. I think we've lost – we have this reality-unreality thing going on in the modern world that is disconcerting to me. I worry about it, especially with my children. You can't keep everybody off devices anymore. It's crazy. So if you're going to a ball game and you're looking up something on your phone, or somebody says something and that gives you an excuse to Google something you don't know, whatever it might be, you are ripe for getting a line drive in the face. And if the ball is juiced and we're talking exit velocity and the ball is moving at a rapid pace, there's really nothing you can do about it. So I connected those things in my head based on Verlander talking and the netting going up, and I think it should happen all over MLB. I don't understand what the delay is. Get to it.
It's super unfortunate that the young baseball fan got hit, and that's kept the conversation going, because it's about protecting all the people along the baselines because of the ferociousness of the swing and the ability of the player, the speed at which the ball's traveling to the batter, and then how quickly it's leaving. So if it's about protecting the fans, then listen, this is an issue that every baseball field around the country is going to have to look at. But now, is it going to trickle down to the other leagues that are going to have the same concerns, that maybe don't have the money to put up this netting? Is that going to become an issue? But I'm all for the protective netting because, like you said, people aren't going to get away from their phones. They're not going to stop looking. You're not going to bring a young kid to a baseball game and ask them, he or she, to sit there for 2-3 hours to completely stay disconnected off of their phone. So if it's a matter and if it's a way that you can protect them, then I'm all for it. You know, go ask Alomar Jr. What does he want? What does he think that should happen? Because when I saw how much it affected him immediately following after hitting the young fan, it's something that he never wants to go through in his life, and I don't think any other baseball player in their baseball life want to go through that.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it's a good idea in the interests of safety. I'm glad the White Sox have been the first team to take this initiative, but you know, I do think it does have something to do with the fact that the ball is different. You know, people call it juiced, and they say that it's wound more tightly. I don't know whatever is happening with the ball.
So is Dustin.
Dustin is always as wound as tightly as the new juiced baseball here. Yes, that is that goes without saying. But I think if there has been an alteration to the ball, and the fact that players in every sport, not just baseball, but are bigger, stronger, faster, hitting the ball at a higher velocity. You know, you look at some of the exit speeds coming off the bats these days. It's unbelievable. And it may just seem like it's happened more recently with fans, you know, being injured by foul balls or whatever it is. Maybe it's been more magnified lately. But if there, all of these things are going to go in one direction and people are going to continue to get hurt, I'm glad that they're doing this before somebody you know, actually dies at a game like we saw at the hockey game. What was it, about 10, 15 years ago with the young girl was killed by a puck that went into the stands. And after that, you know, more safety measures were taken. So I'm glad that the White Sox are getting ahead of it before anything horribly tragic happens. And I don't think it's about, you know, paying attention or being on your phone. I mean, you can be paying the most attention of anybody in the ballpark. If a ball comes at you over 100 miles an hour, you're not going to be able to move regardless of whether you're looking at your phone or not. So I just think that this makes sense for where we are right now in 2019 with the game where it is as well.
Bravo. Bravo, White Sox. Jumping on it. I literally am applauding it. This is great. You know, it's good that the Pirates and the Rangers and the Nationals have also come out and said they're going to do it. But look at the White Sox. They just came out and did it. That's awesome. I love it. I mean, there's no reason not to do this. No reason. There was a 79-year-old woman that died
right
at the end of last season at Dodger Stadium, towards the end of last season, August, I believe, was when she incurred the injury. And so it's just... There's no excuse. There's no reason for it. If the ball is indeed juice, shouldn't all of MLB get netting up immediately? The answer, the only answer, is yes. Yes, you should not have to worry about bringing your kids to a game and them getting hurt. That situation in Houston with the Albert Almora foul ball was horrible. And you shouldn't have to worry about your kids getting injured or anyone in your family getting injured or you getting injured. And even if you're paying attention, the reaction time, things can just happen so quick. These balls are flying into the stands. I mean, everyone is saying the ball is different. Steve Stone was on this radio station, I believe a month ago, with Bernstein and McKnight saying they need to deaden the ball because he believes a pitcher is going to get killed on the field from a ball. The way it's coming off the bat now. So, yes, the answer is yes, and bravo to the White Sox.
I mean, good for the White Sox. I'm fine that they did it. Each team, I believe, though, should have the choice. I don't think this is something that has to be mandated by Rob Manfred. See what I did there? I don't think it's a must. I had a loud conversation over the 4th of July holiday weekend about this topic. I'm all for protecting people. But why not look at plexiglass? Why not look at some sort of clear glass that we could see through? I just personally don't like looking through the netting. Again, you don't have to sit in those seats either, right? And I think that Major League Baseball, on a team-by-team basis, has gotten a lot of negative feedback from their season ticket holders about sitting in seats behind netting. So I think it's going to be something interesting. But, hey, the White Sox think this is a great idea. God bless them for doing it. I like them putting the fans first. We'll see. We'll see if it hurts the season ticket base. We'll see if season ticket holders want to move to different sections. And if you have season tickets over at 35th and Shields, and you have thoughts on this, I'd love to hear from you.
Well, that's an interesting question.
Oh, I like that.
I like that question because there's not an obvious answer.
Who should be the Cubs' second baseman coming out of the break? And is it more about the players you want to see there or guys you just don't want to see again?
You know, first of all, is that guy here yet? Is he a part of the Cubs either, you know, in a rehab assignment or on another team waiting to be traded to the Cubs? I always thought it was going to be Addison Russell. You know, the other day when Addison Russell made that really lackluster play, I think it was right when Kimbrel came in the game and he was playing deep and he just overthrew Rizzo at first base. And then the next play he makes was an unbelievable effort. He's playing up in the infield. They thought there was going to be a bunt, and it was a shot hit to him, and he made a great play. So he gives you signs that he has the ability to play the position. I don't know if he's here yet. And Ropel Garcia, does he have the skill to sit there and play second base and do it air-free? Because obviously he can hit well enough to attract enough attention to be here. But and Mully, you always, you know, you talk about leaving a person in the position they play. I don't want to see him move Baez. I just want him to see him stay in his own place. So to me, I still if you look at the roster, and if no one else came here, I always think it's going to be Russell. But is there someone developing or tradable that could be here and be a part of that equation?
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think that at this point, coming out of the break, you probably have to go with Robel until he proves that he can't hit. I don't know how good he is defensively. That seems to be a problem.
Not but very.
Yeah, that seems to be a big issue. But if he's hitting a home run a game, maybe you can turn aside and let that one go. You know, is Ben Zobrist coming back? I don't know when. He might be the long-term answer at that position. I don't really want to see Daniel Descalzo again. I don't think I want to see him again. I think you might even want to DFA him. I hate to be forthright about it. Addison Russell, something's wrong there. I don't know what to make of it. I would be happy with David Bote, but I think that at this point, Garcia is the short-term answer. Maybe Zobrist is the long-term answer. I wonder about who they're trading and what they're getting. So it's difficult for me to sit here and say that they should make a big move, especially if they believe that Zobrist can get back and can help them come playoff time / run to the playoff time. So I'm going to go with Garcia initially and then just roll the dice.
Yeah, and I think it'll be really interesting to see the lineup that's trotted out there tomorrow. It'll be really interesting to hear from Jed Hoyer this morning when he joins you guys at 8 o'clock, because Jed is often very candid and forthcoming. You know, he's not going to say we're going out, we're going to target this guy in a trade or anything like that, but he has said on this station that if an option presents itself from outside of the organization to jolt the offense, then they will take that up. And I think second base, maybe center field, would be the two most glaring deficiencies in terms of production for the Cubs so far this year. So those would definitely look like the spots that they would be looking to fill as best as possible if they're able to do so with the means. For me, though, with this current roster, I think I would go with David Bote starting tomorrow at second base. You know, Robel Garcia is a player who put up spectacular numbers in AAA Iowa, certainly earned his way up to the bigs. I just don't know how, what's the word I'm looking for, how sustainable that is going to be. You know, there's a reason sometimes guys, you know, 26, 27 years old, you know, takes them that long to get up to this level. While they have worked incredibly hard and they have earned that opportunity, there is something missing there. I mean, he struck out a ton in AAA. How's that going to, you know, translate up to the big leagues when the pitchers are much, much better than that? So, you know, you give him his opportunities. Certainly you mix him in and out of the lineup. You know, Joe is going to mix things up and play guys at different positions. But for me, though, I think David Bote has not only this season, but last year as well, with what he did, earned himself a little bit more playing time than he's been getting this year. It's pretty crazy when you look at the wins above replacement for the Cubs. Obviously, we know the top four, Bryant, Baez, Contreras, Rizzo. And then you got Jason Hayward is fifth, who's having a really good year. David Bote, sixth on that list in position players this year, albeit in limited time. So he has taken advantage of his opportunities when he's been in there. And I think he deserves a run of games in the starting lineup at second base.
I agree. David Bote, I believe, is a good answer to this question. He's a serviceable second baseman. And your other options, yeah, Daniel Descalzo, it's not really working out. Not really working out. You know, you can in the Cubs teams of the past couple of years, the combination of Addison Russell and Javi Baez have been a really good tandem there in the infield. But yeah, I agree, Mully. Addison Russell looks lost. Absolutely, yes. So I think David Bote, and I want to see Robel Garcia and what he can do. I think those are the two guys I want to see the most. Absolutely. I want to see what Robel Garcia can bring to this team. We know he's been hitting well in the minors, but I want to see defensively what he can bring to this team.
Yeah, Garcia, Bote, that's fine. Wait on Zobrist, all of that's fine. I don't think I want the Cubs using any real assets to go out and get a second baseman. Joe can figure it out, play the numbers, play the metrics, play the hot guy, and let's see what happens.
That's a good question, Dave. I think
rumor has it that Dylan Covey could return and pitch for the White Sox on Saturday. Does this news excite you? And will the Sox rotation be better in the second half?
Dylan Covey, yes! I am excited, believe it or not. And I am surprised myself that I'm excited. But they need to stabilize that rotation. They need someone to be the fifth starter, maybe the fourth starter. So I like what their rotation looks like moving forward here. Giolito, bringing Cease up is a big deal to me. It'd be nice if Ivan Nova could pitch better against a team other than the Cubs. It's great that he can pitch well against the Cubs, but you'd like that to expand. You know, obviously, Ronaldo Lopez is a guy that has got to turn it around. He's got to turn his career around, and he should be motivated by seeing the way Giolito is done it. I don't know that you can do it in season, but I'm not giving up on Ronaldo and Dylan Covey. That's a professional performance. They've invested a lot of time in Dylan Covey, right? I don't know that they've invested a ton of resources, but Dylan Covey's a great story, former roommate of the great Chris Bryant in San Diego, and a guy that obviously was drafted and was found to be ill and went through all the trials and tribulations, and he finally gets to the White Sox. And he has, the last few times out, he's given them a professional performance, which is what you need from the back end of the rotation. And I think that Cease in particular and Covey coming back, that will stabilize. I think the rotation, as bad as it was, a lot of it was you didn't know who was going to be pitching. You didn't know what to expect. Maybe now they can get into a little bit of a rhythm of having five guys you can line up and you know who's coming each day. I'm not saying they're going to pitch better, but at least you'll know who it is.
Well, it's nice that they have the example of Giolito, what you can do to turn your career around, to make some changes within your throwing motion to become the pitcher that even he wanted to be when he came up to the major leagues. But if you took Covey and you didn't have his name next to him and you just looked at his numbers beside and you said, hey, this is a pitcher that's coming into our rotation, would you be excited about it? I don't think so. And so it's going to have to be that coming off of a shoulder injury, he's, have to make sure that this thing is 100% healed so you can go out there and you can give a realistic effort for a major league level, or else you're going to get jacked and it's just going to be the same old, the same old business that you're going to bring in a pitcher that really doesn't have the ability right now to go out there and be an asset for the team. So I'm not excited, but I think, again, with the Giolito experiment, we all have a completely different opinion of him than we did last year. So hopefully maybe that can filter through the pitching staff and it can help him.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say that I'm excited per se. I'm intrigued, certainly. I'll be watching. That's what I'll say. But, we have seen Dylan Covey perform well in the past over stretches of time. We've also seen him perform very poorly at times as well. And Tom, as you bring up the shoulder inflammation, which caught him on the injured list there for the past few weeks, that's always concerning when you have a pitcher that's on the shelf for a little bit with a shoulder. That's always something that you want to avoid. So it does remain to be seen if he can get back to the heights that we saw him at during his little run last year, where he was very good during the middle of the season. Like I said, I'm not excited, but I am intrigued, and it's welcoming to have a guy back in the rotation. Hopefully, if he can stay healthy, it's nice to have somebody in there who will at least give you a chance to win. Like you said, Mully, go out there and give them five or six innings and hold them to two or three or even four runs. Just don't go out there and lay an egg and get your what's lit up in the first or the second inning where you're down six or seven or eight runs. Just go out there and eat some innings up, give your team a chance to win. In terms of the rotation, in the grand scheme of things, obviously, Giolito, with what he's done this year, he is going to be your anchor. Cease had one pretty decent start. It remains to be seen how he will perform over the rest of the season. I'm very optimistic. I think the fact they have Giolito and Cease right next to each other lined up in the rotation is a very good thing, because now, instead of just having the one day of the week where you can look forward to who's starting for the White Sox, you've got two right next to each other bunched up, and Nova and Lopez have to be a lot better in the second half for me to be really excited about this rotation.
I wouldn't say excited either, so I'm going to use the word interested. I am interested to see a Dylan Covey return and if he'll be a good pitcher, if he can contribute to a starting rotation in need. But that will look better in the second half. Yes, I'm very excited to see if Lucas Giolito can continue to repeat how good he was in the first half of the season before the All-Star break. What Dylan Cease can do, I'm really excited to see his next start. So, yeah, not excited about Kovey, but interested is the word I'm going to use.
Well, if Kevin's not going to be excited, why in the wide world of sports would I be excited for Dylan Kovey? As Don Cooper would say, they could do worse than Dylan Kovey. We've seen worse than Dylan Kovey.
Seen much worse.
Right, much worse. Will the Sox rotation be better in the second half? I would think so. I don't think it could really... I mean, listen, for as bad as the rotation overall, 1-5, has been, it's pretty interesting that the record stands where the record does stand.
I think when we ask this question, will the rotation be better in the second half, I think it's all down to Dylan Cease and what he does. I mean, would you guys agree with that?
I agree. That's who it would excite me. Like, Dylan Cease's next start excites me as opposed to Dylan Covey's next start.
The Flying Dylans.
It's a great question, and so many of them were so good. In fact, all of them I learned something from, that if I mention one of them, I'm going to leave out all of them. And if I try to mention all of them, I won't remember some, and I'll regret that.
That guy was the Bears coach. Mark Trestman.
Two seasons. What is the biggest storyline for the Bears heading into training camp, and what is the most under-the-radar story that requires more attention?
You know, I think the biggest story is Chuck Pagano taking over for Vic Fangio. We talked about it earlier when we talked about Buddy Ryan and Vince Tobin taking over for him, and actually the defense statistically performed better under Vince Tobin's first year than it did with Buddy Ryan. But there is definitely a difference. But you're also, like losing Wilbur Marshall, you're going to have to make changes within the defensive backfield with Clinton Dix. And is it going to be Buster Skrine for the nickelback, or is there going to be a rookie that's going to emerge? And then when you think about those decisions, and then you think about their first opponent in Aaron Rodgers, yeah, he's going to be facing the Bears defense with a new offense, new philosophical thinking out of the huddle, that he's not going to have the freedom he did in the past. So that, I think that's going to be an interesting kind of game plan. Right week one is their offense, their offensive coordinator against Pagano and his defense. And then, you know, David Montgomery, what is his contribution going to be early in the season? Is he going to come in here? And I know they have other running backs, and I know that they're going to have an important role on this team because Matt Nagy's not a one running back person, but is David Montgomery going to be able to give these guys something that Jordan Howard couldn't? And if he does, you're going to see a real asset coming out of the backfield that maybe can be a weapon on more pass plays than what they thought Jordan Howard was it. So going into the first game, the topic is going to be football's in the air against the Bears and for the Bears, and you're going to see how both of those aspects work out.
I think that I think it's interesting you say that, because in my opinion, the biggest story is Mitchell Trubisky. It's whether they have fixed the running game, if they've gotten more weapons, if there are more players to it. But it comes down to Mitch and his accuracy and him knowing where to go with the ball and him making correct decisions. And Mitch can run. And he's done a lot of that, but is that what you want to do in the context of the offense? Has he missed too many plays, and will he see the field better? I mean, this is Mitch in the third year. This is, you got to make a decision about him moving forward. So is he going to be a good player? Is he going to be a great player? Is he going to be a mediocre player? I think he's going to be, at the very least, mediocre. I think that he's got a very good chance to be good. I don't know that he's going to be great, and I think that's what I need to know. And hopefully by the end of the year, second year in this system, third year in the league, we'll have a pretty good feel for it. You saw him, Tom, at the convention, the 100-year celebration. Someone told me that he looks physically bigger, that he looks like he's more – he doesn't look like a college kid. He looks like he's an NFL player now.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely mature. And even watching him through OTAs and in minicamp, you know, he carries himself differently. He's a lot more confident out of the huddle. He has a better understanding of the terminology, so he's not thinking as much. He knows what he's saying. And I think that's when you can really – you know, allow your skills to take over when you talk about long ball accuracy, limiting his run. You'd like to see him run as a threat,
yes,
not as a need.
Exactly.
And that's what you need to get out of
him. Yeah, and I'm going to be very curious to see that development, and I think that it's still about the quarterback, and I'm very curious about that story. I think the unreported, underappreciated, underwhelming story is this change of defensive coordinator. It is Chuck Pagano, and he's very good with defensive backs, was an old DB coach. I'm very curious to see him as an in-game caller of plays, blitz, whatever his reaction is, how he sets up his defense, whether or not it's just going to be the skill of the individual players or there's going to be a feeling that this is a special defense. And I think my fear would be they take a step back on defense. I don't know how far you could step back because, again, the talent level is fantastic. But there is change, and change is always it's always opportunity, and it also scares you.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are a lot of storylines here, from Chuck Pagano entering the fray to the never-ending kicker saga to the new running back and the next year in the offense for Trubisky. And I think that's it, to me, is the key, is the offense, and Mitch in particular, because with this defense, Molly, even if they do take a step back, which is likely because it's hard to be number one 2 years in a row, especially with some of the turnover that they've had. But I think even if the defense regresses a little bit, they should still be good enough to win this division with an above average offense. And even though the numbers looked pretty good and Mitch had some really good games last year, overall on the season, he was very inconsistent to me. When you look at the offensive rankings, they were 22nd. In the league in total yards per game, 22nd in the league in passing yards. He's got to be better than that. He's got to be above average to give this team a chance to win. You can talk about the defense, you can talk about the special teams, you can talk about everything else, but if the quarterback doesn't step up and have a better season, along with the rookie running back, along with Adam Shaheen, who should, if he's ever going to do anything, it has to be now. Trey Burton might have something to prove as well after what happened with him in the playoffs last year. I think it's all about the offense, and in particular, the quarterback.
Well, for me, it's always Mitchell Trubisky. That's the biggest storyline for this team, period, what he's going to bring to this offense. I think, obviously, the loudest storyline this Bears offseason and the one that we will remember the most is this, the circus that has become this kicker situation, though. That's obviously the loudest storyline we keep hearing about, the one that keeps reoccurring. But yeah, the most serious answer here is Mitchell Trubisky. Absolutely. Can he take a step forward? Can he be the great quarterback? I mean, the Bears just need him to be a good quarterback. But can he take another step forward? And it's going to be interesting to see. The under-the-radar story, Mully, I like the Chuck Pagano thing because that's something that I have certainly underplayed in my mind. I think this is obviously an elite Bears defense. I don't expect them to take any significant step backward this season. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if there's a difference with Chuck Pagano's scheme and his game calling. Absolutely.
Well, there's so much here. I mean, it's always the quarterback. So I think, you know, you could ask this question with every NFL team probably, and it's always all eyes on the quarterback. So I'm not going to use the quarterback right now, but Mitch is always going to be center of attention. We've talked about it a lot on and off the air. Mully and I are in lockstep on this one, worried about Chuck Pagano. Not that Chuck Pagano's a great guy. Chuck Pagano's an accomplished guy. He's got something very special here with this Bears defense, and can he keep it going? That's what we want to find out. And I know, Tom, that you've been asked about it before and you're going to be asked about it again in my kind of under the radar, and this has a direct relationship with Mitchell Trubisky, is James Daniels and Cody Whitehair. Okay, how is that going to work out? Is James Daniels ready to be the everyday center for the Bears? I do believe Cody Whitehair can play guard. I'm not worried about that, but is James Daniels good enough and ready right away to play center for the Bears? And I think that's kind of the story that the typical Bear fan doesn't pay enough attention to.
I mean, that's I do think he is ready, yeah. and I one of the benefits that's going to help Mitchell Trubisky is I talked about it with Lawrence the other day, is the conventional shotgun snap that is going to be delivered to Trubisky. When you had the unconventional tip point first that Cody was delivering, it comes back more of as a knuckleball, and now you got to pay attention to the flight of the football. And you leave your eyes down. Your eyes leave downfield for that instant because you have to make sure you secure that the football. Huh. When you get that conventional spiral type of a shotgun snap, it comes with more consistency in the same spot, and I think it's going to be less of a distraction for Trubisky. So, when you talk about increments of time and success and failure of a football play, an instant of a second, a quarter second, can make big the deal. Difference in success yep. or failure. So I do think that's one of the aspects that is going to help Mitchell Trubisky, with Daniels in there.
You can't beat that question. You can try, but you can't beat that question.
Kawhi Leonard signed a 3-year deal with the Los Angeles Clippers, but the third year is a player option. That means he could be back on the market in 2 years should the Bulls start saving money.
Wouldn't that be great if the Bulls got Kawhi? They could get Paul George too, right? Yeah, that would be outstanding. I think the thing that really surprised me about the Kawhi deal is that I get it, they're championship hunting, but that they gave up a ton if he's only going to be there for 2 years. If they're giving up all these picks for Paul George in order to get Kawhi, and in 2 years he's out of there, that's unbelievable. I mean, they gave away like 10 years of drafting for a guy that'll be there for 2 years. They got two bites at the apple to get themselves a championship, and if they don't get it done, then that great risk and that great move, it doesn't look so good anymore. It doesn't look so great. So I love that they went for it, but I am really surprised at the length of that contract, and it seems like, you know, you now have to take that into account when you try to figure out what they're going to do. Now, maybe he falls in love with Southern California, but he's a quirky dude. He's bounced around, and he's won titles in two different places. He's going for three. Maybe he's going for four. Maybe that's going to be the Kawhi thing. He's going to get, like, some kind of league grand slam where he gets four titles in four different cities.
I'd rather talk about Allie Quigley's 24 points for the Chicago Sky last night, because I'm tired of listening and hearing all these baseball or these basketball contracts, the whining of how much money they're making, the Anthony Davis sitting down and turning his back on his team so he could get figure out his exit strategy out of New Orleans, and now Kawhi Leonard, that's going to leave Toronto in his wake, go to the Clippers. Talk about signing a length of a contract one day with a certain amount of money and then backing out and signing a shorter-term contract.
He could have gotten a max deal down in San Antonio, and when all is said and done, he'd be $100 million richer. He left $100 million on the table in order to do this tour he's doing right now.
You know, it's not only Kawhi Leonard. There's a lot of other guys that are leaving their teams in the wake after signing these. You know what a max deal means to these guys? Nothing. A max deal, they don't, you know, all that is signing a paper, and their agent's going to make a lot of money off the contract that they're signing their player to. And then a year, 2 years later, they don't care about it, and they're just concerned about someone, a buddy they met in the offseason, the player they made friends with on a different basketball team, in trying to devise a scheme to get to a city so they can buddy up and play together. It's just frustrating for the sport. And I'm not envious of the amount of money they're making. And I love, as the basketball player only, I love Kawhi Leonard. He's a great player, man. That guy, he does things on the basketball court. If he's limping backwards, you think his knee's hurt, then the next thing you know, he's dunking a ball with his left hand, jumping over the top of everybody. I envy their abilities, but I don't envy the way they're marketing themselves and what they're doing to basketball, what they're doing to season ticket holders, and how ungrateful they are to teams that are trying to make a commitment to them, and they won't make a commitment to the teams.
Well, as far as the last part of this question, no, the Bulls should not start saving money for Kawhi Leonard. I think that is one of the most ridiculous thoughts ever that he would ever sign here with this organization. But I disagree with you a little bit there, Tom. I think it's good that the players are taking the power back in the NBA and that they are able to dictate the course of their careers as they see fit. I mean, they are the product. They're the reason that people go to the games. They watch the games. They're the reason we talk about it. We're not here talking about GMs and owners and governors and everybody else. We're talking about the players, and they are the story. So I'm glad that they are taking the power back and taking control of their careers and not letting other people dictate where they do and do not play basketball.
Yeah, the Kawhi Leonard decision, another unconventional one, but that's what he does. He's going to continue to be the most interesting guy in the NBA, clearly. No, the Bulls should not start saving money now because the Bulls need to worry about the 2019 Bulls. And if the Bulls are good enough after 2 years, if the Bulls are good enough to actually make some kind of big run and everything is right, yes, then you can consider Kawhi.
Watch Big Ten football, Ryan Field, this fall. Number 17, Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Iowa, and more. Season tickets on sale now at nusports.com. You know, Kawhi Leonard, great. Okay, that's fine. Option out. These salaries are getting ridiculous. But I'm sick of the idea. Wait till next year. Wait till the summer of 2022, Bulls fans. Okay. Let's get this core group together and see what happens. I've got massive fatigue of the wait till next year. Wait till next year. The summer of 2021.
But you're a Cubs fan. That's like the mantra.
Different sport. Maybe spoiled because I got to. It's like the glory days, going through all six championships at my time in my life. No, saving up money for Kawhi Leonard, no.
I do think Bulls fans are massively spoiled and entitled because of the Michael Jordan years. I think that people expect this franchise to be that all the time, every single year, when it's just completely unrealistic. There's not going to be another Michael Jordan, and people need to stop acting like the Bulls are this historic team because they got a little lucky there.
All right, 312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. We're going to get into these topics. We're also going to hear from Chris Bryant. We'll tell you what Chris Bryant had to say about Joe Maddon. I think it's a fascinating series of comments here from Chris Bryant, and they speak volumes about where the Cubs are at, where Joe Maddon is at going into the second half of the season. We'll get to that next. It's Mully and Haw. He is the legend. He's the great man himself, Tom Thayer, sitting in this morning on Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 in the score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.